Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we have author Jeff Crawford, and he's going to talk about his book, Through Black Velvet Eyes. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you, Sherry, for having me. It's a real treat and an honor to be here.
Oh, I'm happy to have you here. Why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and your background?
Very different from the way most writers start. I never went to school to be a writer, never wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be a cowboy, so I did that. I cowboyed all through high school and after high school, and I did that in Florida, and then ended up doing some different things after that, moved into larger industry, and then moved into engineering after that, and now I manage a sewing factory that's owned by my family in North Carolina, and I've been doing that for 21 years.
Wow. What made you start writing? Just because you're a reader?
I am a huge, huge avid reader, and I always have been. But I came up having to have a small surgery 4 or 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and I knew that I was not going to do well if I didn't have something to occupy my time for 2 or 2.5 weeks of downtime. So I've been thinking for a while about these stories that I had built up from my youth and younger days of all the cowboying and the hunting and the fishing trips, and because I've always been an outdoorsman. And I thought, well, you know, it'd be fun to put those down for the future. But nobody, I knew well enough then that nobody was going to want to read those if they were just, you know, my stories. So I said, well, you know, what if we change it around a little bit, change the towns, change the settings, and let these things happen to two old men in 1880s Montana. So, you know, you would change a truck to a wagon or whatever. And I did that, and it was a lot of fun. I wrote this little 25,000 word story. And sort of got the bug, and I thought, you know, that was fun writing that, but I believe I could do a better job. So while I was writing that, I had an idea for something else. So I started tinkering with that, and I wrote another book. And when I got done with it, I thought, well, you did that and had fun. Let's write a different one and do it better. So what it turned out is I wrote 8 books before I ever wrote the first one that I thought was good enough for public consumption. We finished that about midwinter of 2012, and I decided I let a few people read it just for the fun of it, and everybody sort of had these big rave reviews about this short book. It wasn't but 45,000 words or so, we got to investigating on that and decided that we could put that out as an ebook with almost zero cost and see what happened. We did, and actually sold a couple of copies. And while the editing and the processing and all that was going on, I'd been working on a second one. So we put out the first one in February of 2013 and actually edited and got the second one ready by June of 2013, so I put out another ebook. And the whole time these things are in process, I'm still writing 3 hours a night after I get off. And we came up with the third one, which was a much bigger, broader, more imaginative book than I'd been able to write until then. And we put it out in December of 2013 and actually went ahead and put it out in print. I self-published that one and put it out in print in February or March of 2014. And then while all of that was going on, I was trying to do book signings here and promote and market and whatnot. I was still writing every night, and we were able to put out the fourth book in December of 2014 and actually put it out in print the beginning of March of this past year. And we've been touring that book and trying to promote that and sell a copy or two here and there. And
how did you balance between all that writing and the rest of your life? I mean, you were working, you have obligations. Yeah. How did you balance it?
I tend to have tunnel vision when I get hooked onto something. 15 years ago it was golf, and that's all I wanted to do was play golf. And I did that every 3 minutes. Well, I did the same thing with writing. I would go in at night after I finished work and sit down and religiously write for 2.5 hours a night. Now, that may only come up to 200 words, or it may have yielded 2,500 words. But I tried to make sure they were good words and not just space filler. But I would sit there and grind, and the key was to not think about it during the day, or you get so overwhelmed. You go in at night and you start fresh, and I was able to go in there and turn the day off and turn the writing on, and it for whatever reason I was able to do that, and it worked. And I still do that when time permits. It's not as easy as it used to be with 4 books out and a little bit heavier load than I was carrying at work. But I'm still able to do that, and I'm about, 80,000 words into the fifth novel right now.
And do you have a family? Do they understand?
I do not. I'm a bachelor. I've always said that I would never marry any woman that would have me as a husband.
God.
if she's that bad off, I probably don't need her. So I only have to look out for myself. The only thing that gets jealous is probably my banjo. I like to play the banjo and fiddle. So they've had to take a back seat the last few years and to the writing.
Do they pluck at you and say, "Play me, play me"?
They just sort of lean there against the wall looking sad.
Yeah. Aww. What kind of books do you like to read?
I like to read a lot of different things. My favorites would be, I like American history a lot. I am a real settlement of this country up through the Civil War buff. Everything from the French and Indian Wars through the settlement of Kentucky and the opening of the Cumberland Gap all the way through post-Civil War. In fact, that's where I wrote my first 3 books, was in that 25-30-year period after the Civil War. And then I started getting a little bit foundered on that, and I was afraid I was going to write something that was not beneath me, but was starting to feel phoned in. So I didn't want to do that. So the fourth book, I branched out and tried something new and wrote a modern piece and put the main character as a woman, which was 2 things that I had never done. And it was that was a lot of fun trying to work that out and do that and make it believable, make it accurate, make it interesting. I didn't want it to come off being hokey. Or whatnot. So I tried to make it extremely realistic.
Yeah, it's sort of difficult for a bachelor to understand how a woman thinks. I mean, do you have sisters or a mom or good friends that are ladies? Or how did you come to that understanding?
Well, 95% of my workforce is women. And because it's a social industry, that helps. And I come from a huge, huge family. Not my immediate family. I only had 1 sister. But there were so many and cousins' wives that were around that I could draw on and draw personalities from habits and tendencies and knew how people were going to react to certain things, especially because I only write about the South, because that's what I know. So there was, you know, when I had to think, okay, this is, this situation, it would pop up, and this is how this person might react. I had several that I could choose from until I developed a personality for this character. And once I did that, then it became easy. Now, the main character in this latest book is also blind. That was the harder part. I had to think, okay, can she do this by herself? And if she can, how would she do it? Or would she have to get help? Or so you sit there and you put a lot of thought process into this book, reasoning it out and seeing if it would actually work, if it's believable, could somebody do this? And to do that, I would say, okay, if I was in this position, could I do it, and how would I do it? So those two things, it being modern, made it easier to write in some ways because the vernacular was a little easier, the settings were easier. You could scoot around in the car instead of having to, you know, plan a day trip on a horse or whatever. But the being blind and the personality of the main character being a woman was much tougher to write, but it was a lot more interesting than I thought it would be.
It's interesting because sometimes when you have a character, you never know what it is that's going to be difficult. One of the most difficult characters I ever wrote was a character who was secluded most of her life so that she didn't have any verbal skills. She was very bright, but she didn't know how to communicate. And it was really difficult to write because how do you have a character communicate who doesn't know how to communicate yet? I mean, it was very hard. But you never know. I mean, it's like your character with the blindness. It's just, it's interesting because you have to figure out a way to do a bridge. So the character, you can know the character's thoughts, but you also have to understand their feelings about this thing, and that's sometimes hard to express. Did you find it difficult for that when you were writing The Lady Who's Blind?
It was very difficult to write the concept of her wanting to be fairly independent and to show that independence, and at the same time go home and know that she has these insecurities. There were things that bothered her that pride wouldn't allow her to show. She had to show that she was standing on her own two feet and was going to accept nothing less. Now, the only sort of in between there was the fact that she had a friend that knew her as well as she knew herself and knew, okay, when to back off and give her some room or when to, you know, sort of smother her a little bit. And she knew when to help and when not to. And that made this woman's life a great deal easier, even though she was frustrated by it at some point. But, you know, there were little scenes like she wanted to do a bit of a life makeover, and she couldn't just go shopping by herself because because of the obvious, she just couldn't, and she didn't know who she could trust to be honest with her if this looked good or if it didn't, or if she needed to hit the gym a little harder or if she needed to do this or that. But there was that one person that she could rely on, and that's the only sort of fall down to her total independence was this one woman that could be extremely honest with her.
That's another thing. A character has to be vulnerable in order for you to relate to the character, but if it's a strong character, it's a difficult balance sometimes.
It is. I think in this book it would not have, It did not end the way I thought it was going to when I originally had the idea. And that came about when she starts getting these inklings that there was an auto accident 2 years before you opened the first page of the book. And that's where she lost her sight in this car accident. And the car accident also took the life of her husband. And then you start, as you read further and further, she starts getting these inklings and these little doubts that maybe this wasn't necessarily an accident. And things just happened up really badly. So on top of this job that she didn't like, it was the only one that she could get, and she lived in this little apartment by herself, and she was, for the most part, totally alone, maybe more alone than anybody that was alone, because, you know, she's trapped in a world of darkness. Then she finds out that this didn't have to have happened. And that really starts, you know, putting the zap on her. And there's a lot of people will tell you that side stories and backstories are, you know, just space fillers in a book. But I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think they're great segues into letting you know what happened without just, here, this is what happened, which is kind of boring to me. So you find out through all these little side roads how all this came to be and when it came to be and what was the reasoning behind it. And it makes for some really interesting reading, and it makes for some really great, if you're one of those people who like to really love a character and at the same time have another one in the book that you really want to hate, then this is a great book for that. because you can do both.
And subtext is so important, because subtext is what tells you, that brings depth. If there isn't subtext and emotional and vulnerability and things like that, then it's just it's two-dimensional, and there's nothing there. You have to have that.
I agree.
No matter what kind of art it is.
I agree. You've got to be able to, when I write, and I guess it's the same with about every writer, but it really gets in my head when I do this. I know this person as well as if I'd lived with them for 20 years. I can see little tendencies in them when I'm writing this. It may not always come through in the words, but for me to be able to write that, I have to be able to see, okay, does she raise her eyebrows when she, you know, when something strikes her as being smart alecky or whatever, or does she make this expression or just little bitty tendencies. And if you can convey that, if you can get the person that's reading the book invested in that to where they see that character that way and they see all these little nuances and whatnot, then you've done your job right. You've got it to where they're seeing what you're seeing.
I agree. I absolutely agree. It's so important. And when, I don't know, when I'm reading a book, whatever kind of book it is, as long as I'm talking fiction, of course, if there's no subtext, no depth, it's just basically, oh, well, that's pretty scenery, that's snappy dialogue, but that only keeps your attention for so long. It doesn't grab you. At least that's
right.
In my opinion.
I agree totally. And there's certain writers that are, to me, that are just the tops at that. And I think they do it without even meaning to anymore. They've gotten so good at it that it's just second nature. My very personal favorite writer of all time is famous a lot of people's is Stephen King, and he writes such simple sentences, such simple word structures, and conveys so much imagery and depth to whatever he's talking about, especially characters. I don't even think he tries to do that anymore. It just happens. And that's an art form that is beyond belief to me, that he can do that without being. Another favorite writer of mine is Dean Koontz. I think Dean researches things very well, and he comes up with great imaginative ideas, and he churns out these books, and they're great and they're fun to read. But he works so hard at describing things, and he's just the opposite of Stephen King in that regard. for me, if I tell you that somebody went into a barn, I'm going to tell you it was an old barn. It had been there a while. It was covered with weeds. The boards were gray. Well, to me, that's about all you need to know. It's an old barn. You know, Dean may spend 2 pages describing this barn down to where they bought the nails. I personally don't think you need all that, but he's very good at and very in-depth at that kind of a description. And that's his thing. And, hey, God love him. He sold a bazillion books doing it. You know, it's just whatever you find works for you. But because of that, you get a real sense of being in that book. You see what he sees. I just don't do it to that extreme.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. When I was a kid, I fell in love with Vivien Leigh and all her movies and stuff. And like I said to you privately before, I get obsessed. So I had to read everything about Vivien Leigh and her autobiography, her life and everything. And I see every movie she made. And of course, I saw the most famous, Gone with the Wind. And I liked it a lot. I mean, you can't go wrong with, you know, Clark Gable and everybody in it. But when I read the book, I basically kind of like tripped through the first few pages. She spent so much time explaining what the flowers were on the grounds of Terra and every inch of, and how her dress, I mean, okay, let's get to the character already.
I understand exactly. I was that way about Moby Dick. I kept wanting that book to get interesting. And to me, it never, I know it's a classic, but I can't stand that book. Because it was so cut and dry, and it was so, this was this, but you never, I never got emotionally wrapped around any of the characters in that book the way I thought I should, you know. But that was, you know, that was just me. I may go back and try that one again someday. But
well, you know, just because a book is a classic doesn't mean you have to like it.
I mean, yeah, it, if I'm not mistaken. Isn't that a classic, like 3 years after he wrote it and died penniless in a gutter from pneumonia?
Uh-huh.
I mean, nobody
uh-huh.
wanted it when he wrote it. And now it's, you know, a must read or something and makes great movies. But
on the other hand, there's someone like F. Scott Fitzgerald, who also was, you know, it was pretty much his masterpiece, in his opinion, was The Great Gatsby, which is my favorite of his books. But when it came out, it was not a hit. In fact, it was out of print. And then the movie came out with Robert Redford back in the, I think it was the 70s. I think it's 60s or 70s. I don't remember exactly when. And then all of a sudden there was a resurgence, and then everybody started studying him. And then all of a sudden it became a classic.
Right. I'm that way about Hemingway. Hemingway, I know what he's done. And I know where he ranks in the halls and halls of fame and all that, but I have problems latching on to some of his characters. But
he also triumphs war.
Yeah, I mean,
he loves war. He loves killing people and animals, and it gets to the point like ew.
Yeah.
It's hard to relate to someone like that.
And I decorate my house with, I used to when I had a lot more time, with animal heads and hornet's nests and deerskin rugs and things like that, because that was what I did and still like to do. I like to hunt and fish. I'm an outdoorsman. But, you know, after I've read about it, I don't need to keep reading about it. You know, it's just enough is enough. You know, so I can understand where you're saying.
It just I don't know. Like, For Whom the Bell Tolls, the whole thing is a love poem to killing people in World War One. I mean, not I'm sorry, Spanish American War. I mean, oh my God. And yet I know he writes beautifully because I've read other things he's written. Like he wrote the short story that became To Have and To Have Not, which is a beautiful story. So I've read other things, and he writes poetic and beautiful stuff. But it just some of the context, like you said, not my cup of tea.
For about 15 minutes after I read The Sun Also Rises, all I wanted to do was go to bullfights and have champagne brunches and smoke cigarettes. But, that wore off kind of quick, and I realized, okay, this is a bunch of elite people that I'm not ever going to run with. So it was a fun book, but that one didn't last long. But he is what he is, and I can appreciate his work, but I just don't necessarily dig it.
But that's part of being a writer. There's going to be people who love you, and there's going to be people who don't. And just because you wrote a classic isn't going to make any difference on that,
That's it. When I did my first book, I didn't know if I had written a good book or not. I really didn't. I thought it was an interesting story. And I found this guy who at the time was Mr. Everything in North Carolina. He had just been North Carolina's whatever, writer of the year or whatnot. And I called him, and we talked for a few minutes. And I said, I've written this story and this book, and I think it's okay. But I said, I don't know what I'm supposed to do with it next. And he said, well, I'm not going to tell you because I don't know. He said, and I don't give out advice in case it's wrong. He said, I don't do that kind of thing. He said, but I know a lady. Said she's an editor and writer. He said, why don't you call her? Said she knows more about this kind of stuff than anybody. So I did, and I said, what do I do? She said, find somebody who doesn't know you and doesn't love you to read your story, and tell you if it's any good or not. I said, okay. I said, why don't you do it? And she said, no. She said, I'm old and retired. My eyes hurt, and I don't do this kind of thing anymore. I've got four sitting here on my coffee table that I'm not going to read. I said, ma'am, I can listen to you whine all afternoon, or I said, you can just give me your address and I'll go to the post office and mail you a copy right now. And she says, well, go ahead and send it. So I sent it to her, and she called me back a couple weeks later, and she says, there's about 8 people a year try to write this exact same book, and they have for 50 years. I said, oh, really? She said, but yours is the first one that I ever thought was done correctly. She said, I think you ought to do something with it. You ought to publish it. So that told me right then, okay, maybe you've got a little something, a thimbleful of something there that's worth looking at, and because somebody might like what you've done. So that's the reason I went ahead and did this and and wrote the second one and wrote the third one and tried to get better every time. I didn't want to write the same book again. It was fine. I wrote the first book in 28 days and it was done. First to last and it was done.
Jeff, sorry to interrupt. We only have like about a minute. So I wanted to give you some time to let people know. Do you have any events that are coming up that you want people to know about so they can come either online or in person?
Let's see. I don't know of any that's coming up right now. I know there's 2 book signings in the all things. Soon as I hear about those dates, I'll post those, but I don't know about them. You can always go and look at the calendar on my website, which is at www.authorjeffcrawford.com. You can read the overviews and the descriptions of the 4 books that I have out, and it'll tell you what's happening with the 5th book and when it could be expected, and you can get any of those books through Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and anything that we have coming up, we try to update that website as quickly as we can.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for being on my show. It was a lovely talk. I really enjoyed it. I hope you did too.
Oh, I did, Sherry. I appreciate you having me on, and it was a lot of fun, and I appreciate talking to you.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.